Hi, it's Tim Dre, president of the Illinois AFL-CIO. Thank you for listening to The Worker's Mic, supported by the Illinois AFL-CIO, fighting every day for working families. Visit ilafl-cio.org today. Enjoy the show, and remember, it's better in a union.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to The Worker's Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. I'm Ken Edwards with the National Coalition of Labor. Sitting to my right, Ed Maher, National Coalition of Labor. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Ken.
How's it going?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Really, really good. And no Phil today.
Yeah, Phil's not here.
Why?
I don't know. He just, I'm looking over at his chair. There's nobody sitting in it.
There's no golf. Yeah. I don't think he's golfing.
I think we're calling this an unexcused absence.
He needs a note.
Yeah, I didn't get a note. Hold on. Tony, did you get a note? All right, the booth is saying they do not have a note. So
Phil's absent.
Phil, if you're listening on your way to the station right now, you better put that thing to the floor.
His pay is docked. So we have an interesting show. There's a lot happening in the world of labor, workforce, employment, unemployment, some employment, anti-employment.
America's favorite layoff.
What, Christine Noem?
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
We lost one job that nobody's complaining about.
America's favorite layoff. Well, Ed, she wasn't laid off. She was moved to a different position.
Yeah.
She now runs the Sword of the Shield of Americas or something like
that. That's what I heard.
So that was made up a minute before they gave her the position.
So I'll say this. Her job is being done now, or going to be done, I think, March 31st by Senator Mark Wayne Mullen. And I didn't know this until earlier this week, but he is a former undefeated MMA fighter.
Yeah.
So we're putting an MMA fighter in charge of border security.
He literally challenged the head of the Teamsters to a fight on the Senate floor.
I remember.
Just ridiculous.
We're both consenting adults.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's going to make...
He got up and said, like, come on, let's just do this right now. Like, that's his way of solving things.
Yeah, he's going to... he can't even find the border between Mark and Wayne. It's all one word.
Good one.
But he, I think he's going to make Pete Hegseth look like Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, no kidding. But he also, like, doesn't he come from construction or
pretend
that he had, like, a construction company?
He has an associate's degree in construction management, and I think his daddy owned a construction company.
Oh, there you go.
So there's that.
Okay.
Well, he's got that going.
Obviously, he qualifies him for the Department of Homeland Security?
Correct.
The head of Department of Homeland Security.
That's correct.
Mark Quain.
I can't wait to see the ads on my TikTok and Instagram feed. It's going to be him, like, leg locking the former Ayatollah, God knows what.
How about this? Maybe get some people that have some, I don't know, credentials, former experience, like qualifications.
Yeah.
Because it seems like everything is just a mess.
Do you get the videos from the White House on your social media feeds?
No. What do you mean?
Like the White House has a page, and it'll just have videos of, like, you know, kids playing video games, and then all of a sudden missiles are hitting Iran. They're like, FAFO.
Are you serious?
It's like, well, that's sort of tasteless in a war situation, but I'm pretty sure, and they're going to find this, I think the New York Times and other newspapers have essentially come to the conclusion that we accidentally bombed a elementary school with like 170 kids, and we're putting out these videos about joking around about missiles. I don't know.
No, listen, I'm no fan of Iran, right? And I think we could all agree about it. I don't care about Iran at all, but I also don't know, like, why we're bombing them, because we got rid of their nukes last year or something. I don't know. I just, none of this stuff makes sense to me.
They're still figuring out the reason. They're going to get back to us on the reason.
It's called bomb first, ask later, right? Yeah. And so what's the worst thing about starting a four-week war?
What's that?
The first 6 years.
Yeah.
So anyway, we have that. And then we also have some new guidance from the Department of Labor.
Yeah.
Which is having its own issues. I heard they had a little shakeup. They may have had to let a few people go.
Well, we've talked about this a couple times, but the Lori Chavez de Remer, the Secretary of Labor, who came in, you know, as sort of a,
almost union friendly,
like wiping our brow in collective relief, because it could have been worse,
right?
You know, there's been all these allegations of drinking on the job and all this kind of stuff. Her husband is no longer allowed in the building because he's had sexual harassment or assault, one of the two violations or reports filed against him. But now she's had to let two staffers go for allegedly falsifying her flight logs to make it look like she was on official business.
Meanwhile, Kristi Noem had a bed in her private jet or something. Did you see that?
She sure did.
They said she was having an affair with some other dude.
Corey Lewandowski.
Yeah, there was a bed there.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure all that might have been the straw that finally broke Trump's back.
Oh, my gosh.
We got to send you to this new made-up thing.
Yeah.
The DOL's got a lot of problems, but they've finally, tried to do a little bit of work, I guess.
And what was the work? It was good for the people, good for labor, I'm assuming?
No, not really.
Oh.
The top labor solicitor at the Department of Labor said this week that enforcement of federal labor laws should not be prioritized in situations where the workforce is unionized or where part of the workforce is unionized.
All right.
So what that means is, if there's, say, like a factory and one group of workers is unionized, they aren't going to prioritize the enforcement of wage and hour payment, child labor.
Because there's a union there as the enforcement mechanism?
Yes. Okay. And the guidance was that a union is better equipped to handle the on-the-ground situation. So essentially what they're saying is, we, the Department of Labor, an enforcement agency, are not going to enforce the law because there's a union there. Now, a union is not an enforcement agency.
And we certainly don't have the right to walk into federal court and enforce laws and administer penalties and do all that stuff. You know what we enforce? A collective bargaining agreement.
Right.
That's it. We have a contract.
A union is all these workers and they picked a guy to be in charge of them. Like, that's what a union is at its most basic level.
Right.
But the Department of Labor has said that the union can handle all of this stuff, and they do not want the DOL to enforce any action or any enforcement where there is a union present, except if the union does not properly enforce or represent its members. So
then they're going to come in and go after the union.
Correct. Oh, so to boil this down, it is, we are an enforcement agency.
Yes.
We are not going to enforce the law. We're going to give the union, which is not an enforcement agency, we're going to put them in charge of something that they're not supposed to do. And if they don't do it right, we're going after them.
That sounds like I don't know what I would consider a no-win situation for the unions.
Right. Yeah, that's the Department of Anti-Labor.
What is? Come on. Like, listen, just come out and say, we don't want unions here anymore. Just come out and say it. Like, let's stop mamby-pambying around this, right? The Treasury Department got rid of no more unions there, and civil service, and now there's lawsuits going here and there, and blank, blah, blah, blah. Like, just come out and say, we don't want workers to have any rights whatsoever.
I mean, I can't think of a stronger way to say it without saying it than what's been happening. I mean, just this past week, the employees of the Treasury Department lost their union protection.
How?
There was an executive order in the early days of this administration that said that Treasury employees were no longer eligible to be union members. I mean, this is an executive order. It could say whatever it wants.
Sure.
It's just taken this long for action to be taken.
Right.
But let's not forget that this has been done to hundreds of thousands of employees, and it's been reversed every time in court.
Yeah.
Like, every single time this is done, it loses.
Like, it's tariffs.
Right. I mean, everything. So, and you can say, like, oh, well, the courts aren't letting us do what we got to do. But the thing is, when you say, like, we're going to take away union protections from all these workers.
Right.
There are bright legal minds on both sides of the aisle who say, you can't do that. That's not legal.
Right.
And then it's like, well, we're going to do it because this is what we were elected to do. We're going to do it. So then if it doesn't work out, and I think tariffs is a great example of this, you can't blame the judiciary when the economy is impacted by your tariffs getting struck down, when everybody who knew what they were talking about in the early days said, you're going to get dinged on this. Yes. This is not legal.
Right.
You know, again, as I say almost every week now, the gang that couldn't shoot straight.
Jesus. All right. Well, listen, we're starting the day off with some wonderful news as normal.
Yeah.
But I do.
Hey, Kristi Noem did get fired.
That is. I do enjoy that.
Yeah. The dogs on her ranch back in North Dakota or whatever, they're all trembling for her imminent return. Go hide. They're like, hide, Fluffy.
Run free.
We're going to be wild now.
So, all right. But I do have some a fun topic.
Okay. Well, let's hit it after the break. We got to take a break.
Okay. All right. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back with a little bit more lighthearted labor.
Sounds great.
All right. Be right back with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. Ken, Ed, no Phil. Fun stuff. You ready?
I'm ready.
Here we go. All right. Besides carpenter, what is the oldest profession in the world?
I don't think I can say it on the radio.
Yeah, of course you can. It's prostitution. And so prostitution happens to be, or courtesans, as they are called, happens to be legal where, Ed?
How do you know what they're called?
Because I read about it.
Okay. All right. Good answer. That's a good answer again. They happen to be located where?
Nevada.
Yeah. It's something with population, and if your county population is under 10,000 people or something.
Nevada has the only, I think, legal brothels in the country.
They had a show. There used to be a show about that, the Bunny Ranch. It's on like HBO.
Oh, really? Never heard of it.
Yeah. I used to stay up, and my parents would go to sleep, and I'd sneak back downstairs and watch that.
That's not creepy.
When I was in my like late 20s.
That's not creepy.
Just kidding.
Well, speaking of the Bunny Ranch. This is not the Bunny Ranch, but it is Sherry's Ranch. And I think it is similar to the Bunny Ranch. As a matter of fact, it is. They employ 74 sex workers.
Okay.
Which is legal in the state of Nevada and, like you said, in certain places in the state. And they, the sex workers, decided that they were going to form a union. How do you like that? So
I like everybody forming a union.
But you want to talk about, like, you know, there's been this whole, you know, I don't know, move about, like, you know, non-traditional workforces unionizing. Well, here's one. And it's called
the most traditional and the least traditional all at the same time.
It's so funny. So check this out. They, and this is what just drives me insane, right? We talked last year about the dancers.
Yeah, exotic dancers out in California.
Absolutely. And so, I mean, I have a bit of a tie-in here as well. So these workers in Nevada were offered employment contracts. And in the employment contracts, it was like this, just like, you know, what would be considered like a contract of adhesion, which is basically, here, take this one-sided contract, you know, or go away. And it's basically a garbage contract. And that's what they said that they were offered, including things like, we're going to set your hours. We're going to keep your likeness and your videos and all of that forever in perpetuity, even if you only worked here for a week.
For like blackmail purposes?
I don't know for what. To sell it?
What kind of videos are we talking about?
Well,
I think the customers are going to want to know about
that. That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a very good point. So, you know, so they said, no, absolutely not. And they decided to form their union. They did, with the Communication Workers of America, CWA, which I was like, wow, the CWA. I mean, it's communication, right? It's just nonverbal communication.
That's correct. 90% of all communication, Ken, is nonverbal.
I didn't know that.
That's true.
How do you know? Okay. So anyway, so they formed the union, and, you know, sure enough, the very first thing that the brothel owners say is they're not employees, they're independent contractors, even though they just offered them an employment contract that
sets hours.
That caused them to form a union. So, you know, once again, here we are. You know, it's non-traditional. They deserve a union. Everybody deserves a union. But, of course, employers got to fight. They just have to fight.
Employers can make arguments to be in control of certain things in a workforce. In this type of a workplace,
you would want to think that the woman is in control, or the person that's doing the work should be in ultimate control
here. Yeah, I would have to think that no matter where this is happening in Nevada, it's got to be extremely tightly regulated. Like, security's got to be like just on the other side of the wall or whatever. But yeah, like,
I don't think that's the case.
I mean, in my imagination, it seems like maybe that's an ideal workplace for something like this.
So wait, hold on, I just want to go back to this. So when you're imagining these things, you're imagining the security officer.
You know, it's a very fair question. I'm imagining the security officer. He's got a cup against the wall, and he's listening in just to make sure there's no funny business, or not the wrong kind of unfunny business.
Unfunny business.
But no, I mean, this is the kind of thing where, like, we always talk about there being, like, dignity in work, and there's got to be, workers have to be protected. This is certainly an extreme case of that, where, like, these people are putting themselves on the line, and they've got there's a thick line here that can't be crossed.
And it's extreme here in the United States. If you go to other countries, it's, you know, some countries in, like, Amsterdam, right, it's legal.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like sex workers are legitimate workers.
100%.
And so... whatever. So, like, let these folks have a union, give them some dignity, and of course, instead, the employer turns around, and they think they fired a couple, you know, or fighting the existence of the union, and just the regular nonstop, right?
And I'm so interested. I mean, I've got to look into this, just because I'm interested to see what the employer would argue. Like, set your hours, we set the amount of time, we set how many times a day. Like,
they're arguing independent contractor anyway, and man, I'm sure they're going to jump on the bandwagon of the NLRB is unconstitutional, you know, or something.
They're
like
making
that.
Sex work just like regular work.
It's just
you got to be in by 9 or you're fired. Yeah, been standing around the coffee pot.
If you got time to lean, you got time to clean.
Yeah, man, it's just, they made it no fun.
Well, you imagine, like, you just drove all the way out to the, you know, to Sherry's Ranch. You flew to Vegas and then you drove out to Sherry's Ranch and there's a picket.
Right?
Do I cross the picket line? Yeah. And then what? Who's behind the picket line?
Now, the answer, of course, is never cross a picket line.
Never cross a picket line.
Though, if you've got a bunch of these workers walking a picket line, I mean, that's something to see. I've never seen that before.
Well, they did it in the strip club.
That's true. And I couldn't get out there. We had stuff going on.
Yeah. We should have gone out there. Well, here, you're so
man
here.
On the street.
But here, I want to just follow that up, right? So, I forget the name of the bar, but the dancers of the bar, you know, and so I got to stop calling them, like, you know, prostitutes. I think it really is a name. It's courtesans. And
I think sex workers is,
I think that's fine.
That's
yeah,
the preferred
yeah,
term.
I think that's right. And the dancers, you know, instead of calling strippers, I think they like to be called
exotic
dancers.
Yeah. Performers, even. I think the branch of the union they joined was performers.
Actors Equity.
That's right.
Yeah, performers. And so, you know, they fought. And then they also said they're independent contractors. This was, I think, when we had a sort of quasi-functioning National Labor Relations Board. National Labor Relations Board, you know, came in and said, no, they can unionize. And then their union was recognized finally. And, okay, they're going to start bargaining a contract. But then they were, you know, I don't know, they were back to work. They were not back to work. They were back to work. They're not back to work. That was 2023, Ed.
Right.
You know, it's 2026.
It is.
Yeah. You know what they've gotten? Nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah, no contract.
No kidding.
No contract. And they said the place is different now. It's a shell of what it used to be. And so I guess in these non-traditional settings, first of all, it's very, very, very difficult to stand up a union in a non-traditional setting. It's got to be like, look what's happened in Starbucks, right? And it's very hard to get a contract. And you got to really, really think this through. Like, okay, what are your leverage points, right? And you know, if you are an exotic dancer and you're just going to go after that one particular place, you got to figure out, look, there's a world in which the place closes, right? And says, okay, you know what? And they have a right to do that. We'd rather not be a union, and therefore we'd rather go out of business. And so you just have to be strategic in your thinking about this. I hope that the sex workers in Nevada are strategic in their thinking about it. Everybody does deserve a union. But, you know, I always said as an organizer at 150, you know, organizing is the easy part. Literally. It's you know, and it's not easy.
It's not.
But it's the easy part of
the process.
Unionism. Getting that first contract is the hard part.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what the average time to get a first contract is?
I don't know.
3+ years. And yeah. I believe that the average amount of unions that get certified that get a contract is less than 50%.
I agree. I think I've seen those numbers. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know,
it's not easy, but it's worth it.
It's worth it, but just make sure that you do it and you do it right. And you got some leverage and you got a game plan and you got some choke points and you know, you have some stroke and you have a plan B, you know, all of these kind of things. and make sure that, you know, when you do it, and God bless them, I think joining the CWA was a smart move. Joining Actors Equity, smart move, right? Joining a union that's already exists. Mm-hmm. That makes sense because they have experience, they have some, you know, resources, et cetera. But these are not easy tasks. So, you know, we haven't followed up on the dancers in quite some time. And, you know, to be blunt with you, Ed, I just assumed that they got their first contract. And sure enough, here we are literally 3 years later, no contract. So we'll follow up on all sex work.
Yeah, I mean, the right? dancers, that's it. We I think we talked about trying to get somebody on the show from out there.
Well, yeah, we should try.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should try on this one as well.
Okay.
All right. Listen, that's all I got for this segment. We're going to come back in a couple minutes, and we're going to talk about a whole bunch of other labor and workforce-related stuff, as well as the economy, right here on 720 WGN, The Workers' Mic.
Hey, thanks for listening to The Workers' Mic. More show to come, sponsored by Hinge Health. Hinge Health specializes in personalized digital exercise therapy designed for hardworking people, just like you. It's pain relief without waiting rooms and costly medications. Visit hingehealth.com today. Now, back to the show.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premis Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. Ken, Ed, switching gears, jobs numbers, job reports came out, all right? And it's hard to tell, Ed, anymore. I think I don't trust government reporting. And
the amount of revisions that have taken place, even the last couple of years, have been weird. And now the guy running the BLS is sort of anti-statistics. So,
right.
I don't know.
Right. So, but the report said that the net gain in jobs was actually a net loss of 92,000 jobs.
Wow.
And that was in February. In January, the alleged net gain was 180,000 jobs. So far this year, we're
up 90,000
at the most, right? And so
minus one for Christy Nolan.
Less Christy. And so I hate to laugh about somebody's unemployment.
If it's going to be anybody, it's got to be her.
And there's no question about it. It's called karma. And so they said the unemployment rate ticked up, and they said it ticked up to 4.4%.
And it's not a small number.
It's not a small number. All right. And second of all, it's not an accurate number. And you know why it's not an accurate number? Do you know how they define unemployment?
I don't.
It's this really weird formula, and it's got X, Y, and Z, but the big piece of it is that have been looking for a job in the last 4 weeks. If you're over 4 weeks and you haven't been looking for a job for 5 weeks, or you're looking 6 or 7 or 8, then you become underemployed or not part of the workforce,
right?
And so I started to really drill down on this thing this morning, actually, and I had too much coffee, and I was like, what does this really mean? Like, because I always felt like 4% just seems like a really, really low number. Like, all these numbers always seem low to me, and it turns out that it's just a numbers game, and it's like anything else. Like, everything is either conflated, it's inflated, it's underinflated, but the real number, I think, from what I've gathered after all is said and done, is unemployment is actually about 10 or 12%, meaning that's how many people do not have jobs, have either given up looking for the jobs, has taken a break from looking at them, simply can't find one, haven't applied for one in more than 4 weeks, so therefore they're not, you know, reported. And you're talking about, you know, how many people in the country? 300 million. How many people are in the workforce? You know, let's just say it's half, 150 million. You know, that's a lot of people that are unemployed.
For sure.
So when we're, you know, look, when we decided to attack the world at the moment, like, we're taking a page out of Germany's book.
Just like we're going to war against the world.
Yeah. I think we bombed Ecuador the other day. I was talking to my son, and, you know, and my ex-wife is a flight attendant, and he's like, you know, mom's in Argentina. Oh, no, she was in somewhere in South America, and I was like, I don't think it's a good place to be. And He's like, why? I was like, because they just bombed Ecuador. He's like, they did? Yeah.
This is all like, making me really start to question the validity of the FIFA Peace Prize, Ken.
That's right. That's a good point. How do you get a Peace Prize if he's constantly going to war?
Yeah, the guy in charge of soccer is really rubbing his head now, like, oh, maybe shouldn't have done that.
But the point is
there a Nobel War Prize?
Good one.
Because I think that's how the T-Man might get his Nobel Prize.
Can you get the war prize and the peace prize?
I don't know. Certainly not. But I think the problem is if you had a war prize, you'd be encouraging people to compete for it. And that would, they might get 1 year of that, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so funny, except that, you know, when we're bombing kids and our American soldiers are dying and there's not 100% clear goal on like why we're doing this. But the point of being back for the economy is like, look, you know, the administration ran on, got to fix the economy, got to create jobs. We're going to have the greatest economy in the world. Day one, I'm going to stop all wars, and we're just going to focus on our country, our borders, and our jobs, manufacturing, great jobs, bringing back mining and coal, and you know the tariffs are going to make everybody build stuff here. None of this happened, and we're going the opposite direction. In 2024, Ed, they were adding 180,000 jobs a month. 180,000 jobs a month. A lot of those jobs were part of the new Green Deal.
Right.
Right? The wind, the electric vehicles, chip making, etc. And, you know, I was listening to that, what's the guy's name that you did the panel with, the Proud Union guy? What's his name?
Oh, yeah, Proud Union guy.
That's his name.
Yeah, Proud you find Union him on guy. TikTok. He's the best. He's from Missouri.
If you get a chance, look him up. I think he's like from the St. Louis area.
He is.
Like an insulator. Mm-hmm. And we got to meet him a few weeks ago, and that was really, really cool. And he's got a massive following, and he said that there are 1 million construction jobs empty right now. 1 million. Because we don't teach shop class anymore.
That's for sure.
We have spent so much time telling our kids to, you know, go get a college degree or whatever. But the point being is that, A, I think that obviously if there are construction jobs, people need to fill them, all right? B is, you know, look, administration, you ran on job creation, good economy. Things are unaffordable right now. They continue to be unaffordable. And I'm not saying it just for saying it. Go buy eggs. It is what it is. They're not as expensive as they were a couple of weeks ago, but they're still more expensive.
Yeah.
Gas has just risen again because now we're in war, right?
Yeah.
Every time that happens.
I got to point something out, and that is, you know, like a month ago I had the flu. My wife had the flu. We just always, with three kids, you always have something going on. I've got a mom that I help out with some stuff, and I've been to the pharmacy in the last month probably 8 times, yeah, waiting in line for a prescription. And I think all those times, but one, I've seen somebody ahead of me told that their insurance no longer covers their prescription. Oof. Or without insurance, this prescription is going to be $300. And I see people trying to haggle about the amount of pills. The state of things, I think, for ordinary people right now,
yeah,
is not very good. No. I think there's a lot of people that are just kind of whistling and figuring like, I think everything's fine. The stock market's at 50,000. The Dow's at 50,000, so things are good.
The stock market is not an indicator of
our for economy. Sure. I agree.
It is for the 1%.
Yeah, but people are struggling.
They're struggling.
In a lot of ways.
And you know what? I read also that, Ed, that right now we have the highest rate of people borrowing from their 401ks for hardship loans.
For sure.
The highest rate ever in the history of 401ks. And why? Because people can't afford medicine. Or they can't afford to make a mortgage payment, or something happened, and like you said, everybody's got an average saved of $800 or whatever that number is. People cannot afford a dishwasher breaking, or you know, something like that, right? And so it's really, really tough right now. It's not working. You know, Morgan Stanley of all places, right? Morgan Stanley. They make bazillions of trillions of gazillions of dollars. They're really profitable. They never cried poor, and they just laid off 2,500 people.
Yeah.
Why not? Right? We just figured, like, I don't know, AI, whatever.
Right.
Yeah, 2,500 people out the door. Right. Enough with this. Right. Let's create jobs. Let's figure out ways to create jobs instead of, you know, this is constant like race for profit, race to the bottom. I saw. We've talked about this before. I'm going to say it again because now I've seen them 2 or 3 times. These little mini robots driving down the street, right?
They just kick it.
They're really
knock it over.
They have cameras all over them.
Smile and Kick It.
I did give it the...
What would the Beastie Boys do? What would they tell you to do? Kick it.
Good one. I did give it the finger.
Yeah.
And I took a picture of it. But there it is.
Is that it's hate just, speech? Just,
I don't know.
I guess then if you kick it, that might be a hate crime.
No, it's a robot.
Crime against robot.
It's a robot. But there's our demise, right? We're literally looking at our own demise. Don't use those things. You know, don't... Every time I get AI on the phone, right... I can help you. I am a human. No, I don't want to talk to you. I want to talk to a human being. I can certainly help. If you would just tell me, I would like to talk to a human being.
I like the thing where it, instead of having you wait on hold, it calls you back when it's your time to talk.
That is actually, that's genius.
Because if I'm on hold, it's usually with some place where I'm going to be on hold for like half an hour.
And then by the time you get on the phone, you're going to be angry.
Right.
Right?
Because the hold music is not what it used to be. There used to be that one hold song that everybody had where you're sitting there, bing, 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 bing.
And you're okay with it.
I was okay with that because I was just grooving with that one song. But now, they don't have music. They're trying to sell you other things. You know, you could get a shingles vaccination. Yes, I know that. I don't want one.
Oh, they're trying to sell you stuff while you're on hold.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I'm not scared of no shingles.
Shingles, shmingles.
I've heard shingles is terrible.
But listen, I'm way past my time to get a shingle shot. I know I need to do it. I think you have to take like two or three rounds of it.
I think there's two of them, and they lay you out.
Oof.
You should go do that.
I'm gonna get it done. All right, so we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to finish up the show, talk about some National Labor Relations Board undevelopments, as you would now call them.
I like that.
There's no more developments in our world. Everything is undeveloping. And then we got to plug a parade that we're going to be at. Right?
We don't have to. We want to.
We want to plug the parade.
One of the best labor events in Chicago. I'd say the premier labor event in Chicago all year long.
It is super fun. All right, listen, we'll be right back with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. Listen, Phil, before we get to a couple of things, Phil on Worker Wednesday, before he got cut off, talked about bossware, it's called.
Right.
Right, where the bosses are spying on you now in some really sophisticated ways. And they are, right? Screenshots, keystroke logging, all this kind of stuff. And years ago, it was for truckers, right? It would monitor their speed. There were cameras pointing inside the truck, Ed, and it was crazy. And we had it a few times when I worked for the union. And guess what? If you're in a union setting, and Phil alluded to this, but I want to expand on it. If you are in a union setting, here's another benefit of being unionized, and that is there can be no surreptitious, meaning you don't know what's happening.
Right.
Surveillance of you without your consent through the collective bargaining agreement. And they're like, wait a second, then what's the point of hidden cameras? And we're like, exactly.
Yeah.
The point is there can be no hidden cameras with a union contract. So wait a second, you're saying that we have to disclose them to you? Yes, you do. And then as a matter of fact, not only that, you have to bargain over why you're using them. Why do you want them? Why do you want to point a camera at us? Well, suppose it's not surreptitious. Suppose we just put a camera out there. You still have to bargain with the union about what you're using it for. Are you using it to track people, their lateness, you know, their smoke breaks, whatever the case may be. It's another benefit of being in a union. Right now, all these companies are implementing what I think Phil called bossware,
right?
Which is they're just literally spying on you to make sure that you're working hard, you're not goofing off and looking at Amazon Prime while you're working, like all this stuff, and so it's scary world out there.
I remember at Local 150, our IT department implemented something back in like 2020 or 2021 where. I think that's when everybody started doing all their work in the form of Zoom calls.
Uh-huh.
And it would basically take your Outlook calendar and see how many hours were broken out for meetings and anything else it considered downtime. Hmm. So you'd get an email saying, oh, you had an average of 6 hours of downtime every day last week. So really? I see this come to me on my work email, and I called them and I was like, hey, when I'm sitting working, when I'm having a conversation, when I'm like 90% of the stuff I do is not winding up in Outlook. So like this is nonsense. And he's like, yeah, you're the 14th call we've had on this, and we are going to discontinue the use of this. It's like, yeah, you know, you can, if you sit in a room, you're like, oh, looks like this person isn't working at all.
This is the union's IT department?
The IT department, I think, got a little away from itself.
Okay.
It was just
maybe they forget,
get out of there.
Did they forget who they work for?
Well, I think that that union protection stepped in pretty quick.
That's pretty funny. So what about the WNBA, Ed? What's going on with that?
If they don't have a contract by the 10th of March, so we're screaming right up on it. We're talking Tuesday. If they don't have a contract by Tuesday, they're saying that the season start will be delayed.
Okay.
Now, what have they been fighting over? And I think the league is threatening to lock out the players.
Right.
Right. So 2025 was record viewership, record revenue. They're making money. You know, the Caitlin Clarks and the Angel Reeses of the world are bringing in viewers, and the viewers are staying. And does it have the numbers of the NBA? No. Does it have the numbers of the NFL? Absolutely not. But people watch it, people like it, and it's actually like sustainable at this point. It's sustaining itself. So the players are saying, you know, they want a bigger piece of the pie. So what does that mean? Like revenue sharing.
Yes.
Things like, you know, getting the Supermax contract higher than $249,000 a year. I mean, I want to say in the
What's
NBA,
Supermax? Does that mean the max salary?
It's the max contract you can pay somebody.
It used to be 70 grand for them.
Right. Now the I think the average is close to 70, maybe, and the Supermax is 250 or just under 250. I think the Supermax in the NBA is like $50 million, $52 million.
I think that's right.
And the salary cap for each team is $9 million.
Okay.
The salary cap for an NFL team is like $310 million.
Wow.
Now, viewership and the pay, you know, whatever, like different scales. But they also want things like, listen to this, pregnancy trade protections. Currently, if a WNBA player gets pregnant, the team can just... Okay, we need a center who can play. You're traded. We're getting rid of you, and so they're looking for protections on things like that. So
that's kind of crazy,
right? I mean, it's something I never thought of.
You'd almost think it's illegal.
It's got to be like firing them because they're pregnant has got to be illegal. But
yeah,
the trade protections and stuff. So they're looking for some of these things, and they've been fighting for 17 months. I want to say over this contract. And if they don't, you know, the players were told if they don't get it done by Tuesday, then the season's probably not going to start on time. But whatever, I mean, who cares? They're going to play all the games.
I'm on Team WNBA.
For sure.
You?
Yeah, the owners of these teams aren't just going to not have a season. They've got bills to pay.
Wait a second, I said that wrong. I'm on Team WNBA Players Association.
Okay, well, I'm glad. Yeah, that's what I took it as.
Yes, that's what I meant.
Yeah, you're with the ladies.
Yeah, yes, I am.
It's the place to be.
Yeah, for sure. They deserve it, right?
Yeah.
Come on.
They're the best basketball players in the world.
Listen, it's...
Female basketball players in the world.
First of all, it's really exciting. Second of all, I think it was a couple of years ago that the women's NCAA final was more watched than the men's for the first time ever.
Yeah.
Right? So... Let's give them their due. Let's get them what they deserve. You know, equal pay for equal work, so to speak. You know, and if it's based on revenue, then base it on the same percentages that the men get. I don't know, right? There's got to be a formula that both sides can be happy with. So hopefully the season doesn't get pushed back or canceled. I will not see it. Remember when they brought in scabs in the NFL?
Yeah.
This is like a 30 for 30 on that, I think, right now.
Yeah, if you
Year of the Scab, I think it's called.
If you just bring in a bunch of players that aren't as good...
I'm not going to go watch it.
Nobody watches.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, good. All right, listen, what's the event that you were talking about?
Oh, that would be the Archer Avenue, the Working Families Archer Avenue St. Patrick's Day Parade.
What is it?
This is a parade that was started... God, I want to say 8 or 9 years ago on the southwest side. It goes down Archer Avenue from Oak Park Avenue or Harlem Avenue all the way down to Narragansett. Features a bunch of the unions from the city of Chicago. Again, the group name is the Working Families Parade. So you have a whole bunch of unions, and it's an awesome time.
Yeah.
Every year they raise money for charities and families of fallen police officers and fallen fire firefighters.
Excellent.
Right. So last year, I want to say they did over $100,000 to these police and fire charities. There's no other parade in the city of Chicago on St. Patrick's Day, let's say, to really narrow it down here,
yeah,
that's donating any money to support working people, to support, you know, fallen police officers and firefighters that die in the line of duty.
It's really great.
So if you're interested, and you should be because it's an awesome time, because, last year, I don't know if our listeners remember this, but they started last year having official announcers for the parade.
Who were those?
That was us, Ken. Oh. Yeah, and we'll be back out there again this year.
If you like day drinking and getting made fun of as you walk past our podium, feel free to come on down.
Yeah, have you ever walked down the street and been heckled by three people in a media tower? Because if you haven't, I highly recommend it.
It's really fun.
We can make sure it happens for you if you just come on out to the Archer Avenue St. Patrick's Day Parade.
It is a really good time. Tons of kids.
Yeah.
You know, tons of families.
A lot of police and fire trucks. Like, it's a great parade.
And it's, you know what? It's a little more loosey-goosey than some of these other parades, right? Which is just seems
well, the
so
downtown
formal.
Parade... on Columbus.
It used to be on Michigan Avenue.
It was awesome. It? When it was in the city, it was awesome. Yeah. Out on Columbus, it's like, I remember one year they were like, well, the city's in financial trouble, so we're not going to have any porta potties. So it's like you're lined up for 4 hours.
Yeah.
There may have been some people drinking some green beer.
No.
And there's no porta potties. It's like, how's not everybody going to jail today?
Yeah. You know what's good about the Archer Avenue Parade as well is that all the bars and restaurants up and down Archer Avenue with the parade runs just gets an influx of business.
For right? sure.
It's like supporting local business at the same time.
It's a huge neighborhood. I mean, we deal with a lot of the neighborhood organizations in the lead up to the parade.
Yeah.
And they all love it because they're just like people in the neighborhood, like of all ethnicities. You don't have to be Irish because everyone's Irish on St. Patrick's Day. But,
right.
you know, that's not necessarily an Irish neighborhood, but the whole neighborhood comes out.
It's
you
really
know,
fun.
Bring the kids that are throwing out candy.
It's cool to see them donate the money, though, to a good cause because that makes sense, right?
For sure. I mean, they donated it to Chicago Police Memorial Foundation mm-hmm. back when Officer Ella French passed. They donated some money to Ella French. Every year there's a couple of folks that you read about, police officers and firefighters who die while they're on duty. And whenever I hear of it in the news, I always think, okay, well, there's somebody to raise money for at the Archer Avenue Parade.
It's a shame that there is somebody to raise money for, but it is the way of the world. I remember a couple of years ago, I think there was an officer that was paralyzed and they needed a car retrofitted.
That's right.
For him.
Daniel Golden.
Is that was his name? Mm-hmm. And so they took all the money that from the parade and they bought a car and they retrofitted it so he could drive.
Right. I think it was a Westfield Ford that...
is that right?
They did a really, really solid job of giving a great discount.
That's
cool. I think they might have covered the retrofitting. So
see, this is one of those things. And this is the parade is brought to you by the unions, right? It's brought to you by the working families mm-hmm. and the people. This is one of these type of things where, you know, we look out for our own.
You know,
try and take care of people where we can. You know... Sometimes I just feel like, you know, I'll get an email, Ed, from like Trader Joe's United, support the war against Gaza or support the war for whatever it is. It's got nothing to do with Trader Joe's. And it gets so far afield. Like, let's stick to what we do, taking care of ourselves, our working families, our brothers and sisters in the movement, and our brothers and sisters not in the movement yet.
Right.
Right? Working people. That's why it's called the Workers' Mic.
That's right.
All right. Listen, thank you so much. Hope to see you next Saturday at the Archer. What time is the kickoff?
Noon.
Kicks off at noon. Where?
That is at Oak Park Avenue and Archer Avenue on the southwest side.
Very good. Very good. All right. Hope to see you there. And if not, we'll see you the day after or talk to you the day after right here on 720 WGN Workers' Mic.
The preceding episode of The Workers' Mic was powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare. For additional information and podcasts of The Workers' Mic, visit WGNRadio.com.